We welcome you into another edition of Gateway to Baseball Heaven. I'm your host, Daniel Shopdaw, C70 at the bat, at C70 on Twitter. With me, as always, Tara Wellman from Birds on the Black and the YouTubes and all that, and Tara Wellman on Twitter. We're recording this right after the Cardinals got swept out of Wrigley. Uglyly swept out of Wrigley. And Tara and I are still kind of scrambling to figure out some way to make this not just this depressing, miserable festival of what we saw this weekend. So, and when we figure it out, we'll let you know. But right now, Tara, four straight losses. Cardinals go from 20-10 to 20-14, which is still a good record, but they slide from first place by, I guess, three at that point to out of first and in the second, just by half game. This is not really the way we wanted to see them with their first interactions with the Cubs this year.
No, it really isn't. And not only did they lose all three games, but they did so in pretty frustrating fashion. I mean, the shutout in game one, where Hendricks pitched the complete game on like 17 pitches, it felt like. And then in game two, they gave themselves chances and just couldn't come through, had the lead and lost it. And then in game three, they just, again, had trouble scoring. And then once the Cubs broke the floodgates open, they never really stopped scoring. So frustrating on a number of levels, because a lot of the little things that they've done so well in most of the early season so far, they just weren't able to execute this weekend. And I think because it's the Cubs, because it's an NL Central rival, because there's this brief history of feeling a little bit like the underdogs at Wrigley, there's a little more angst in the reaction. You know, a sweep never feels good when you're on the wrong end of it, but it feels even worse when it's a weekend series at Wrigley on Sunday Night Baseball, and, you know, you just kind of feel all of that all at once in a bit of a microcosm. It's not particularly pleasant, that's for sure.
Not at all, and it's gonna leave a pretty bad taste in most people's mouths as we go into a homestand with the Phillies and Pirates, and two teams that the Cardinals probably will need to make some hay against. I mean, they're good teams, but they kind of need to get back on the horse, as it were. But you know, you were talking about it before we started the show, and it feels pretty easy to draw some comparisons between this and the beginning of the season when the Cardinals ran into the Brewers and had so much trouble there. But you know, they were able to turn that around. Is there anything, indication in your mind that you know, the next time the Cardinals run into the Cubs, which hopefully will be in St. Louis, I haven't got the schedule in front of me, so I don't know for sure, but that things won't be a little bit different?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to tell, because the things that went wrong in Chicago are not necessarily the things that have been problematic for most of the first month of the season. And they also were a little bit exaggerated, right? The game against Hendricks, I mean, we've seen the Cardinals strike out a bunch of times, particularly in that first week of the season, but then they'd sort of gotten away from that. So all of a sudden, we're seeing a return to that. There were some base running miscues. There was a dramatic inability to drive in runs from third base with, you know, less than two outs. You know, pitching issues that had sort of evened out over the course of the first month. So I guess the thing for me is that, and someone tweeted this earlier, and I'm not trying to steal their idea, but it is true that this three games now is the small sample size in comparison to the month of baseball that we've seen so far. So I don't think that this series means the Cardinals are suddenly bad at baseball and we should just close up shop and go home. I think it just means that they ran into a Cubs team that was on the upswing from their own slow start to the season. And, you know, the Cubs pitching has been really solid as of late. We saw why. The Cubs hitters have been picking things up in some places where they hadn't been, as far as, you know, Rizzo is concerned, for example. And they got some key contributions from guys that aren't necessarily the ones that typically drive in runs. So those are all the things that you that's the mix of a winning weekend for any team. And it just so happened that that's where the Cubs were. And I don't know, the thing that bothered me about this series is that the Cardinals looked much like they did in that opening series in Milwaukee, like they were just back on their heels. They were a step behind everything else that was happening when they were on that streak, when they ran into the Dodgers when they were hot and were able to shut them down. There was an extra little, you know, pep in their step. They were the team that was driving the narrative of the game. And that's what we didn't really see from the get-go in Chicago this weekend. So as far as what the expectation is of that moving forward, the next time they see the Cubs, which will in fact be in St. Louis at the end of the month, I don't know. I mean, I would like to think that what we've seen over the larger picture of the first month of the season is who the Cardinals really are, not this, you know, three-game set in Chicago. But there's been a strange feel in this Cubs-Cardinals series for the last couple of years because the Cubs have been the better team. Mm-hmm. And right now, I think the Cubs still feel like they are the better team. And quite honestly, without Matt Carpenter and Paul Goldschmidt playing like Matt Carpenter and Paul Goldschmidt, the Cubs still feel like the better team.
Yeah, I mean, we got that in our heads a little bit early on that maybe this was not the Cubs' year because they'd started off so weak. You know, what was like 1-6 or something like that, and looked like they were going to get a beat around, but they've obviously played better and there is that little bit of extra there of this was the first time we got to measure up against the team that has bedeviled the Cardinals since 2015, at least the playoffs. And, you know, they didn't stack up well, did not look well at all. And so it kind of feels a little bit different. Like you said, it's small sample and good chance that it's not necessarily what we're going to see going forward. But, you know, until we get a chance at the end of the month, I guess, to rectify this or until we see this rectified, it's going to feel like that's going to nag it, I think, for a while. Yeah. Even if the Cardinals are able to go past the Cubs in the playoff. Because, I mean, the Cardinals win tomorrow, the Cubs lose, and the Cardinals are back in first place. I mean, that's just where we could be at. But it's still just going to nag a little bit. Like, well, and I said on Meet Me at Mutual that if the Cardinals could go in and win 2 of 3, it would put a little bit of doubt in the Cubs' minds of, hey, maybe things have changed.
Yeah.
Whereas if they go in and lose 2 of 3, which I wish they had just lost 2 of 3, you know, the Cubs start thinking, you know, this is okay, we're back, you know, back to where we're supposed to be. We're back to this team and we're going to, you know, nothing has changed. And so, yeah, I think there's a lot more confidence in Chicago, I would imagine, after this series. And we'll see. I also was sitting there watching tonight when Wilson Contreras hit a home run and realized, yeah, Wilson Contreras is one of those guys that always bugs me when he does well, especially against the Cardinals. And then I realized that was every Cub bugs me when they do well against it. You know, because there's Javi Baez, and you never want Javi Baez to do anything. And I guess I could survive if Jason Hayward had a good game, but I don't know. I guess that's part of the rivalry, right? You know, the other team irks you completely.
Yeah, and they feel the same about Cardinals players. That is the nature of rivalry, I think. But you're right. Part of the reason that it's frustrating is because Javi Baez is good, mm-hmm. and that's why it's irritating. You don't care about the players that are, you know, the last guy on the bench that you're maybe going to see in the series. You care about the guys that are inevitably going to be the one to do the most damage. So that's why those guys are so frustrating. But, you know, it's kind of the double-edged sword, right? When not only is it the long-standing rival, but it's also the team that has knocked you out of the postseason a couple of times. It's also one of the teams that you really feel like you're going to have to beat in the division. So it's division losses, which hurt no matter who the opponent is. It's the rival of the St. Louis Cardinals. And it's the team that has bumped you out of the postseason. So it's kind of the complete gamut of the reasons this series is so stressful. And it was at Wrigley, and you know the fans there are rowdy and they're kind of obnoxious if you're not one of them, and that's sort of the beauty of it as far as just the, you know, baseball fandom goes. But if you're if you're one of the visiting fans, it's a tough place to watch your team lose. So just frustrating because a lot of the players that that the Cardinals needed to step up didn't, and frustrating because losing to the Cubs is always a big deal.
Well, and there's that. You can say it's accurate. You can also maybe feel like there's a little bit of inferiority complex, but there is always that idea that the Cubs players, at least of late, have gotten a lot more attention than maybe we as Cardinals fans feel they deserve. You know, again, anytime I sit there and I watch and you follow Twitter and, you know, Cardinal fans are complaining that, you know, ESPN is only talking about the Cubs, or, you know, Fox is only talking about the Cubs, or even saw some people talking about how Danny Mac is only talking about the Cubs. And which I don't know. I didn't listen to it enough to be sure. But, you know, I feel like some of that is just us projecting a little bit as well,
right,
of the frustrations of we don't want to hear anything about the Cubs. So if you talk about them at all, it's too much. But, you know, there is probably a little bit of that. I mean, for the markets and the personalities, maybe, there, you know, that draws it to it. But that adds into that. That mix, and it's a real pain to watch them at all.
Well, and it's when you get so used to your own regional broadcast, any sort of national coverage is going to seem almost biased because it's not biased. You know, because they are talking about both teams, they are giving praise to the opponent, and not just the team that you're watching for, which is not really what you get on a regional broadcast. So Cubs fans feel the same way, Cardinals fans feel that way. Every team that has the pleasure of watching the regional coverage of their team more often than not is going to be annoyed by the national version of coverage. But there is some level of maybe extreme conversation that takes place around, and I've talked about this before. It's tough when you're the national broadcast because you basically come in with surface level information. You have the bullet point storylines that diehard fans already know. So then it sounds like you're just drilling down on these things that are obnoxiously repetitive, but they're telling the story to a national audience who maybe doesn't watch Cubs Cardinals games all the time, who maybe doesn't know about David Bote, or I don't know how you don't know about Javi Baez, but at this point maybe you don't know about Javi Baez. So they're not telling stories for Cardinals fans. They're telling stories for baseball fans who tune into ESPN on Sunday night. So they have to be a little bit more surface level, a little bit more big picture, which is irritating to fans, again, who like the regional coverage that they get, you know, 150 plus games a year. So that doesn't help the bad feelings of a sweep by your rival when it concludes with a national broadcast game, because most of what you're going to hear is, you know, from a perspective that doesn't really serve you as a fan.
Yeah, I think Joe Buck is one that's always said, you know you're doing it right when you get a whole bunch of people on both sides yelling at you for being biased.
Yes.
You know, and I think there is a lot of that. You know, we kind of any time, like you said, we're used to focusing on one team, and so when somebody's coming in to talk about both teams, it is a little disconcerting. But anyway, the Cardinals have to kind of pick up from this. But some things that you can take out of this, I guess one of the things we probably should talk about is the fact that Luke Gregerson was activated this weekend, Tyler O'Neill sent to Memphis, and then Gregerson comes in tonight and I think gives up a run in less than an inning. It was only throwing in the mid to upper 80s. You know, he did have a very strong rehab assignment in the minors, so you take that for what it's worth. But, you know, how long do they go with Luke Gregerson? And, you know, how much should we factor into this small sample size of his first appearance?
Yeah, I mean, it kind of feels like this was a night where everything was going to go wrong. Mm-hmm. So it didn't matter who was out there. So I guess there's some of that. But I think the question that would be important for me is Luke Gregerson a better option than Ryan Helsley? Mm-hmm. Or someone else that has proven they're capable of getting those outs? I don't know that you can answer that question, even if Luke Gregerson is at whatever his version of his best is, with a yes. And that's what will bother me. That's what will frustrate me. We saw last season the dead weight that Brett Cecil became when he wasn't able to get lefties out, which is what he was there for. Mm-hmm. Certainly couldn't get righties out, which is where Pete ended up pitching in, you know, a game like tonight after it was already out of hand. And then he'd make it close because he still couldn't get anybody out. I saw that happen in Chicago last year. But I don't know that this team, particularly with the starters like they have been, can afford to carry around that dead weight for the sake of maybe someday, eventually, he'll figure it out and we can get value out of this contract. Not when there are guys like Ryan Helsley available. Not when Carlos Martinez is working his way back to a major league roster. Not when, you know, there are other options that make this team better. And I just... So tonight, I guess the appearance for Gregerson, man, he got hit hard too. He's lucky that he just gave up the one run. Schwarber crushed a ball just foul in his at bat against Gregerson, and it was a monster shot. But anyway, tonight notwithstanding, that's been my question all along with Gregerson is, sure, I realize that, you know, you signed a guy who ended up injured and you'd like to try to get some value out of him, but what is the top value? What is the ceiling for Luke Gregerson? And is that actually better than the other guys that you have available to pitch in those key moments for this team? So I don't know. I think if it was me, I'd probably find a way to just sort of wash my hands of it and move on, but I don't really expect that that's what the Cardinals are going to do, at least not right away, especially considering, like I said, tonight was a night where it seemed like everyone was going to struggle to get the Cubs lineup out at the end of the night.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. It you know, and again, let's give credit. They didn't bring him into a 3-2 ball game. I mean, he came into a 6-2 game, so we knew that. You know, he didn't cost them the game. Although I guess when they hit three home runs or two home runs at the bottom in the top of the ninth, maybe, you know, but still.
However, I don't know if Chatwood comes into that game if it isn't 13-3 or whatever it was.
Because Chatwood is the Cub version of Luke Gregerson or Brett Cecil or somebody that they're never going to throw unless they just have a huge lead or a huge deficit. But anyway. I really was hopeful that Luke Gregerson was going to be able to contribute this year after seeing what he did through his minor leagues, you know, and of course the whole, hey, he's healthy thing, which, you know, you would expect nothing less to hear from anything like that. But it does feel to me that if they've got, I mean, they do have a lot of guys. Now, obviously, he's not the only issue. We've seen Dominic Leone now blow up for 6 runs twice in the last 5 outings. His ERA has gone from like 1.6 to like 9 over last five outings, so that's an issue. And so it's possible that Leone could be the first casualty or the first person to go down and as they fix things. But there are so many different arms that could come up. Like you said, Ryan Helsley could come back. Carlos Martinez is coming. Alex Reyes at some point in time. Maybe a reliever. I just have problems believing that they're going to stick with Gregerson for more than 2 or 3 weeks, unless he turns the corner, or unless he shows a little bit more of what. And again, this was a miserable night for everybody. You know, if he comes in against Philadelphia and does the same thing, if he comes in against Pittsburgh and does the same thing, then, you know, maybe that pushes him a little bit closer out the door. But I'm not necessarily willing to wave the white flag over one outing.
Yeah.
You know, that said, I do think it's a short leash for him. There's not a whole lot of cost left to cutting him. The option for next year, he's not going to earn. Because I'm pretty sure it's a vesting option of so many innings, and he's not going to hit that. So there's no real downside to letting him go. So I just feel like, again, it's one of those things. The Cardinals have said, this is an important year. This is a year we're going to do stuff, you know, if necessary. And I think that's one way that they can prove that, is not letting Luke Gregerson struggle for a month, 2 months, 3 months on this roster when there are so many better arms available.
Yeah, yeah. And that's, unfortunately, we sort of knew this was coming. We just didn't know what week of the season it was going to hit. And, you know, of course, it would be in the perfect storm of the disaster of a weekend at Wrigley, just because where else would it happen?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's what has to happen. There's no doubt. So, boy, you know, it's hard to remember that since we last talked, the Cardinals did actually have some good outings. You know, they went to Washington, beat Corbin, beat Max Scherzer, won 3 out of 4 out there. It's just the nature of. I mean, has it always been this way, or is it just social media that brings us to this idea that we can't look past the last game? You know, we can't take a big picture view of this. Is it because we are able to watch every game? We're able to be invested in every game? Because I don't feel like I did this growing up, but I guess I didn't follow it as closely growing up. So maybe that has something to do with it as well.
Yeah, I think following it that closely is part of it. I also think that there's, on some sort of psychological level, there's some bonding over the mutual frustrations that happens on Twitter. But there's also, again, a little bit of a deeper dive into what's really going on here. we react because then people react to our reactions. And there's a lot of that that goes on Twitter. And I think it's a really easy cycle to fall into, not just, and I don't know, I don't want to tell anybody how to be a fan. You do your thing, and if you live and die with every pitch and with every win and with every loss, that's fine. I wish you well, because I think you're going to probably take years off of your life doing it that way. But it does. It makes it really hard to kind of keep perspective when we can and do react to every moment. And this series was, I don't know, kind of highlighted that for me, in that, you know, the Cardinals just came off this really terrific stretch where they were basically the best team in baseball for a week, which is nothing in the grand scheme of things. But that's how quickly things can change. But they looked really good against the Nationals, who had admittedly been struggling, but still, you know, you beat Corbin and Scherzer. That's no walk in the park. And then you come in and face the Cubs, and you just get beat. And sometimes you just get beat in this game. But the thing that will be telling, and that they've done so far this year, is to turn around and not let that keep them from getting back to what they do so well. Sometimes it takes, you know, they score in one inning in a game, but it's 6 runs, and then all of a sudden they're back on track. So this homestand, where they've played really well so far, is really important because of how fresh in everyone's minds this weekend is going to be. But they can erase that pretty quickly with a strong series against the Phillies, who are coming in doing their own share of struggling. They don't have a whole lot of hot hitters right now. They've had some bullpen issues of their own. So this is it's a good series for the Cardinals to kind of get things back on track and really just prove that they're the kind of team that can get beat and then bounce back. This is, you know, a four-game losing streak I just saw is the longest, tied for the longest losing streak in the Mike Schilt era, which says a lot about a team in a game that can be as streaky as it is. You can rattle off six or seven in a row. You can also lose eight in a row just as easily before you even realize what's happening. So for them to be able to come back in this next series, get some good starting pitching, have the bullpen rebound, maybe not throw Dominic Leone out there right away, give him a couple of days to get some things figured out, and go from there. It's then all of a sudden, this time next week, we're thinking, okay, this team maybe isn't going to run away with the division and bury the Cubs in the process, but they're still the team that we thought they were after, you know, that 20-10 start in their first 30 games. So as much as this weekend stings, I'm certainly not, despite the drama on Twitter, writing any sort of epitaph for the Cardinals 2019 season. It just, this happens, and that doesn't make it any less frustrating. It doesn't make any of the concerns less valid. But what's more important than the four-game losing streak is what happens tomorrow when they get back to St. Louis.
Yeah. And, you know, as important as the Phillies series is, the Pirates come in later,
yeah,
and not only is that a divisional game, no, but it's important because Tyler Lyons will be back in Busch Stadium. So Tyler Lyons getting the call up this weekend and getting a win today because they scored after he gave up two runs, but that's another story. We've talked about the Cardinals struggling this week and how that changes our perspective. Paul Goldschmidt, here we've had a month of Paul Goldschmidt now, maybe closer to 5 weeks, I guess. And it's not that Paul Goldschmidt has been bad. I mean, he's been, you know, 9 home runs and things like that. He's definitely been a positive to this team. But maybe it's because of the bar that we have for him. Maybe it's because we had some unreasonable expectations. But I can't help but feel maybe a little bit disappointed in what we have seen from Goldschmidt. And like I said, maybe that's just me. But it feels like there have been a lot of different opportunities over the last couple of weeks for a big hit or, you know, something to happen. And it just hasn't yet. Now, again, it's not like a huge sample, and he's obviously done some good stuff. But, and maybe it's a little bit highlighted by the fact that Matt Carpenter's not doing much either. And like you said, when both of those guys aren't going, you wonder what this team is like. But do I have too high expectations for this guy?
I mean, I think the expectations are high because of the track record that he has. So, no, I don't think they're too high of expectations. I think you see that he's a little bit frustrated right now with some of the strikeouts. The thing about having the track record that he has is that I'm not worried that he isn't going to figure it out. Mm. It's just hard to watch until he does. But he did similar things last year, just like Matt Carpenter did. I mean, both of those guys got off to really slow starts last season. Their starts this year, maybe not quite that slow, but still, you know, very frustrating as far as they're concerned. And the thing that bothers me about Paul Goldschmidt is that it's not, you know, with Matt Carpenter leading off, he doesn't always have opportunities to, say, drive in runs. A lot of times he is, in fact, the first batter of the inning, or it feels like, and I don't know if the actual numbers back this up, but it feels like he's batting a lot without runners on ahead of him. With Paul Goldschmidt, it feels like inevitably he's coming up in a situation where he could drive in a run or two, and he just hasn't. Mm-hmm. So more than anything, for me, what's been frustrating is that his struggles at the plate are directly impacting how the Cardinals are scoring runs, which is what you expect from a guy of his caliber hitting where he's hitting. You know, he should be driving in runs, and right now he's just not. So I guess the good thing is, if you want to look at it this way, the Cardinals have been as good as they have been without Paul Goldschmidt and Matt Carpenter pulling their weight, per se. So when they do find that extra gear, or, you know, flip the switch, then they're going to be able to drive this team forward. And you know, I was talking in the Cubs series preview with Corey Finneran from the Ivy Envy podcast, and he was even saying about the Cubs, you don't really want everyone in the lineup hitting at their peak potential all at the same time, because then they'll all go cold at the same time. And we've seen that with this Cardinals team in the past. So, you know, maybe it's not the worst thing in the world for, you know, now that Marcell Ozuna is cooling off a little bit, although everyone cooled off this weekend, it's not the point, that then maybe Paul Goldschmidt or Matt Carpenter can turn the corner. And Matt Carpenter was on base a couple of times today, has scored a couple of times in the last couple of days, so maybe there's a corner to be turned. But yes, as far as Goldschmidt is concerned, I don't think it's a matter of having too high of expectations. I think he's just underperforming right now, and I think he's as aware of that as anybody is, but it's certainly costing opportunities to score runs much more often than I would like to see at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I think some of us thought, and it's hard not to because of his track record, because of what was said last about him coming into the season, that you almost expect him to be like, you know, peak Pujols, where anytime he comes up, he's coming through. You know, he's getting that big hit, or he's, you know, hitting a home run in a key situation or things like that. And it just hasn't happened. But again, you know, we saw Matt Carpenter go on that run last year. You know, Goldschmidt is definitely capable of doing that. He kind of did that last year as well. And if they're going to go cold, be cold in April and not in October. So, you know, we'll see how that goes. But maybe there's some of this idea that we want to see this great Goldschmidt that Arizona got to see for so many years. We're just waiting for that to happen. And his three home run game to aside, we just haven't had those Goldschmidt moments yet. Both offensively and defensively. I think we've seen a few good defensive plays, but, you know, I was looking up his baseball reference numbers right now, and technically he has like a negative .1 war defensively, which is, you know, the small sample size because he's already made a couple errors. But, you know, it's just short sample, and I know that, but it's doesn't mean we can't talk about it, because
that's all we have to talk about, though. I mean, the thing about a small sample size is that right now it's a small sample size because it's all we have. The thing with Goldschmidt is that his walk rate is down, his strikeout rate is up. You know, those are the things that are really tangible as far as how he's seeing pitches or maybe how he's being pitched. I haven't done the Zach Gifford dive into what pitches he's seeing at this point this season, but that's certainly been an issue for Matt Carpenter. The struggles with the slider are now common knowledge, and it seems that opposing pitchers have adopted that philosophy with him, so now he's going to have to adjust. Paul Goldschmidt just looks like he hasn't been super comfortable, and I think for me, that's when you see him striking out. Of course, it doesn't help when he strikes out on a foul tip that never touches bat, or a check swing that wasn't a check swing. There have been a lot of those things as well, but he has had a rough go as far as it almost looks like he just isn't seeing pitches very well right now, because he just looks so uncomfortable and so off balance when he is striking out. So, you know, I think about that Milwaukee series in the game where he hit three home runs. The first one, that at bat, I mean, you saw it coming, mm-hmm. Yes. Because all of a sudden he took a couple pitches, he fouled off a couple of pitches, and you could see him lock in. And that was the first time, of course, that was opening weekend, so first time. It wasn't like I'd watched a whole lot of Paul Goldschmidt at bats as a Cardinal. But you could see him all of a sudden hone in on what the pitcher was doing and how he was going to attack it. I've only seen that a couple of other times from him, and for the most part, he's looked more like the guy who's guessing, who's not picking up pitches clearly, and we haven't seen that same locked in, here's what I'm going to do to attack this pitcher. So, I don't know, ask, you know, Joe Schwartz or Zach Gifford about the pitches that he's seeing and what that means, but as far as I'm concerned, he's just been, he's been uncomfortable, and it shows in what the results are. He's not taking the walks like he normally does, and he's striking out significantly more than he normally does, and those numbers can even out fairly quickly if he, you know, if he figures out what it is that he needs to do differently to adjust to what the pitchers are doing.
Yeah, we do need a good Zach Gifford piece. We haven't had one in a long while. As for Joe, Joe's too busy at Disneyland or something. He's not, not that he's going to listen to this, so it doesn't really matter. You know, we can
complain. We can say whatever we want about
him. Pretty much. I mean, we can complain about Joe all day long. That could be the whole podcast. He wouldn't know. Anyway. and if Joe turns us on, maybe he'll find out that we've had a podcast like that. He just doesn't. He'll have to go listen to them all. That's and find out which one.
He'll never know.
That's right. Let's leave with just a little bit of positive news, I guess. And it's kind of out of the blue, too. And I'm not talking about the jerseys because I'm still not a fan of those. But anyway, the Cardinals, as of yesterday, led the National League. Yes, I believe it's the National League. In stolen bases. yes, National League stolen bases. They've stolen 23 bases. As Jennifer Langosch put in her article 3 years ago, they stole 35 on the whole year. And it's not because Harrison Bader has turned into Vince Coleman or anything of that nature. It just kind of seems to be up and down the line. And Yadier Molina stolen third at least twice and all that. But,
yeah.
But it's interesting to see such a drastic change. I mean, you know, Mike Shildt has said from the beginning he's going to work on the base running, and it really is better all the way around. It's not just stolen bases, but it's taking an extra base and things of that nature. But it's really interesting to see this kind of, you know, tangible improvement in that so quickly.
Yeah, I mean, we've heard about it for, I don't know, the last handful of years that mm-hmm. we're going to be aggressive on the bases. We're going to utilize speed, whatever, and then it never happens. So it is refreshing to hear that conversation and then to actually see it put into place. I think as impressive, I mean, believe me, I was shocked to hear that the Cardinals were leading the league in stolen bases, but I think what's as impressive to me as anything is the number of times guys take an extra base and put themselves into scoring position or create a scoring opportunity by running aggressively and intelligently on the base paths. Now, this weekend, of course, there were some dramatic base running errors that, again, become the most recent thing in people's minds. But for the most part, the Cardinals are running the bases better as a whole, and you're seeing them take advantage of pitchers that they should be taking advantage of, taking advantage of opportunities that they do have, and using this, not just the speed, but using sort of the fundamentals of how to run the bases well, and turning that into a part of their offensive production, which is the whole point, right? It's not just about racking up the stolen bases for the sake of stolen bases. It's because utilizing a running game gives you more options for how to score runs. And we've seen, really up until this weekend, this team do just that. Use those opportunities to turn into runs. And like you said, Harrison Bader hasn't even really been a part of that yet. So get him healthy and get him back in the lineup on some sort of consistent basis, which is going to be interesting to see how that all works out. But that's a totally different conversation. And you might see those numbers go up even more and see how that can become part of the offensive identity of this team, which it hasn't been in a really long time. So, yeah, that'll be really interesting. I've been surprised by who some of those stolen bases are coming from. Stolen bases from Marcelo Zuna and from Yadier Molina. Even Matt Carpenter, I think, has a stolen base or two. So it's not the usual suspects of Harrison Bader and Colton Wong alone. Jack Flaherty has a stolen base. So they're just much more aggressive, but in a good way on the base paths. And that, I think, will pay off at some point, even if, you know, in a series like this one, they're a little too aggressive or, you know, they just can't swing the bats to match what's going on the bases.
Yeah, I think what you pointed out is the important thing. It's intelligently, because we have seen them run quite a bit, just not real well. and they've run into outs a lot more often than they do. I mean, and they're going to still have that at times, because that's what happens when you try to steal it. There are times where you're going to run into things. But for the most part, they've done a whole lot better job of being smart of what they do and understanding what they're trying to do. And, you know, the aggression is controlled. It's not just willy-nilly. That feels like, at least. All right. Well, you know, we will try, hopefully, to have a more optimistic show next week. Hopefully the Cardinals, again, they take on both Pennsylvania teams in Busch. So the Cardinals are, 12-4 in Busch this year. So if they can continue that kind of run, we'll be a lot happier, I think, when we get together next week. So until then, for Tara, I'm Daniel. Good night.
Hey Cardinals fans, thanks for listening to this week's show. If you liked what you heard, you can find us on iTunes. Just search Gateway to Baseball Heaven under podcasts and click subscribe. While you're there, feel free to give us 5 of those little gold stars or even a quick review. And tune in next time as we break down another week in baseball heaven.